All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of Art Lessons Podcast. Adam.
Hey.
Dave.
Hey.
Welcome, everybody. We appreciate you coming in. If you haven't been here before, you haven't listened to us before, basically what we like to talk about is real-time ideas about living creative life, running creative business, doing creative things. That's what we discuss. And we're doing it outdoors. Anybody watching on YouTube is a new scenario. We're in my backyard setting because we just couldn't find the brain power to figure out anything better.
Couldn't find anything.
And you can't see it. Adam, lean this direction a little bit. A little bit further. I just want... No, I can't really see it. Behind Adam is my son's old... What do you call those things? Hobby horses?
Oh, yeah.
Hobby horse?
The radio flyer.
Radio flyer, hobby horse. My son's had forever. He's 8 now. He doesn't use it. But for some reason, we decided to leave it. Just in case, I don't know, toddlers come over.
How come I don't get headphones, by the way? Why don't I get headphones?
Because I only have one headphone slot.
Oh, okay.
I don't even need them now that I can hear them. I just wanted to make
sure. I keep them on now.
I just wanted to make sure that the audio was okay.
Yeah.
So I could get a splitter.
Oh.
I get a splitter.
Genius.
You have to get your own headphones
out. Okay, all right. I'll get them all. Well, this podcast isn't paying for the headphones?
God.
All right.
This podcast isn't even paying for the podcast yet.
This podcast pays for nothing.
However, folks, if you do feel like contributing to the podcast, I have a Patreon, which would help supply effort to get him some headphones, to get us those fancy lapel mics that we talked about in a couple episodes before, right?
Yeah.
Right. You can go to contribute to patreon.com/DaveConry. Go help us out. You'll get bunch of like crazy stuff that you don't get normally, and it'll be good. That wasn't planned. I was just shooting that from the hip, so that's why the ad copy wasn't as good as it should have been, but that's okay.
Plus I'll get headphones too.
Plus you'll get headphones.
You'll feel so much happier that I'm getting headphones.
Actually, I need a new set because look at these. Like there, I had to replace the cups before.
Oh, okay.
But look at this.
Oh yeah.
I've had these forever. But they're all a little bit nasty down there, and they're still usable. But then I have to brush my hair after I'm done because then I've got like black flecks in them. My wife was like, "What is in your hair?
black flecks."
So what's been going on?
I was just gonna ask you the same thing.
What's been going on?
Yeah.
It's been. I'm not a metaphysical guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow like the stars and planets and stuff like that.
Yeah. You don't know where Mercury is currently?
Right. That's funny. That's what I'm bringing up.
Okay.
Somebody had mentioned to me the other day that Mercury was in retrograde or whatever.
Right.
And I don't know the nuance of this, but basically it means usually that's when shit gets all fucked up.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I don't. And that essentially applies to everything gets fucked up for both men and women, right?
Right.
Or is it only, I don't know. I'm always thinking it's women specifically, but I guess not. I don't know.
I don't know. It just seems like I think it's a universal thing, or it's just like, you're just off center.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Like and again, I don't know the deal with it. Maybe it's like this gravitational pull.
Yeah.
But I've seen it in the sky, so I know it's there. You know?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
And so,
yeah.
It happens a couple times a year, and I don't, you know, who knows the science behind it, but it happens, and it's usually like I can almost always tell. Like, I wonder, I asked my friend who's into that stuff, by the way, is that whole Mercury thing happening? And because it just based on the way things are happening in my life,
yeah,
right, the way things are laying out, right, it just makes me think like something's up.
So what happened?
Nothing major, just like a general vibe, right? Mm-hmm. And then like little things like, well, I want to get into this, but like I got rejected for a creative market the other day.
Oh, okay. We were talking about that. Yeah,
you know, and it like really kind of bummed me out.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it just like, but it bummed me out more than it should have. Right. And I just kind of got through it. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. Cause I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But like that, and then the vibe between me and my son was a little bit off for a couple of days. And so it's just little things. I'm just like, God, you know, and I can't, maybe it's in my control. And it's all in my head.
It just felt like something was out.
Yeah, it just felt off.
Yeah, I've had those days. Yeah. I know. You can't really... I don't necessarily know if it's been anything having to do with, I guess, you know, Mercury and retrograde
the
planets. But I definitely know those feelings. I think it's because, conversely, you know when everything's on.
Yeah.
When everything is just like...
All things are firing.
Effortless.
Yeah.
Like you are... Everything is getting accomplished. You're getting everything done. Yeah, your relationships are, you know... working great. Yeah, I know that feeling. But then conversely, I know what you mean when it's awry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, I mean, it comes and goes. It comes and goes, and we roll with punches. And I think that that's, you know, I'm not a big fan of laying blame in other places, right? Like, I try to take responsibility for, what the hell is going on? There's, like, noises, like, ghosts behind us.
It's the planets.
It's the damn you, Mercury.
Creative market.
Right. No, not laying blame on anybody else, not laying blame on circumstances, you know, blaming it on the moon and stars, right? I'm not a big fan of that. But, you know, if it is a thing and it really is a factor, it's like just one of those things like, okay, well, take it into context and collect yourself and figure out a way around it, right?
Yeah,
like, totally. Don't let it sit there and, like, ride on your shoulders the entire time. Just kind of shrug
it off. It's hard to do that sometimes, I think.
Yeah. You know what helps for me is exercise.
Oh, totally. Same right? here.
I'm yeah. sure, like, I mean, we were talking about, like, how surfing for a while for you wasn't really kind of doing the job, but there are days, right, where you get out there in the waves and just
be awesome.
Out
it's awesome, yeah. It's kind of this, it's sort of similar to what you kind of mentioned. You can just, for some reason, you're just having a horrible day, and you just really can't, you know what I mean? Like, all the factors haven't really changed, but you're just having a garbage day, you know,
yeah.
be it surfing, being running, being designing, you know, be it anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sometimes it's difficult to kind of shrug it off. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, if unless you're getting a bad vibe from your exercise too, then generally, yeah, the exercise is a good thing
yeah.
to, you know, to bring you back or at least distract you a little bit, you know?
Because I practice judo. My son and I both practice judo. We do it 2 days a week, and it's essentially 2 hours of getting your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Or at least 90 minutes of getting your ass kicked. It's the hardest workout I've ever done in my life. And I dread it sometimes going there. It sucks when you're in it. You know, I mean, there's fun parts to it, but for the most part, you're just dead.
Yeah.
But then afterwards, you're just like, oh, man, I feel great.
You're glad you did it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you did it. You know, and so, plus, you know, learning skills. My yeah. body's learning new things, right?
I've always wanted to, yeah, I mean, yeah, I've always wanted to kind of do something like, you know, judo or a martial art. I've never had a chance to do it. I mean, you know, Colin, he's
jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Yeah, big on jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. They're very similar, and we were actually looking at jiu-jitsu first, but then a friend of mine showed me that his family was doing judo locally, and I didn't even know there was a local judo gym, and then we found it, and there's kind of a judo history in my son's family, on my wife's family, is judo history. Anyway, it was cheap. It was a lot cheaper. So we went that route than the jiu-jitsu, because jiu-jitsu can be like $100-something
yeah,
a month.
That's more the MMA kind of stuff. Not yeah. like jiu-jitsu in general, but that's what MMA...
Yeah.
It's jiu-jitsu. I'm completely... I'm super naive to it all, so yeah. don't slam me. If
no,
anyone
no, no.
watches this, I,
well,
I've known very
there are
little
judo
about
practitioners in MMA as well. But usually it's like guys that do jiu-jitsu and then they also do something else, right? Or they do judo and they also do something else. So maybe they're wrestlers and jiu-jitsu, or they're boxers, Muay Thai boxers.
Yep.
They do some sort of hand combat, you know, along with the ground and pound stuff,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah. That's what they call it, the ground and pound?
Yeah, like if you get somebody on the ground
yeah.
and just like beating them up from the ground.
Ground and pound,
yeah, basically. Or the grappling, which is like get them on the ground
yeah.
and get them into submission holds or chokes or whatever. And that's kind of partly judo. Judo is mostly about throws, right?
Yeah.
It's about using their momentum against them, using their body weight against them. And occasionally it does go to the ground and you have to learn how to wrestle them a little bit, so...
You know, it's interesting you're talking about, maybe think, you know, you're talking about the, you know, the singular type sports and the non-team sports. I was the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I did team sports. I did, you know, soccer, and when I was much younger, I did like baseball or t-ball when I was super young. But, yeah, it's interesting, you know, never gravitated towards that, you know, kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously skateboarding and
yeah.
surfing and snowboarding are all singular. I feel like a lot of, yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder in a sense, like, I feel like a lot of artists are like that, you know, like that singular kind of mindset, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I did BMX.
Yeah. Same there. BMX,
or, you know,
BMX.
Or we would do the most team oriented thing that I ever did as a kid was probably sandlot baseball.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But we only had like, you had like five guys and it ended up being like.
And it's not even organized.
That, yeah, it's not organized.
Maybe that's the thing. You know what I mean? It's, it's less like, I think when you're a kid, it feels like there's a little bit of pressure, like, you know, because you've signed up, you know, you've got like uniforms, as where when you're playing Sandlot baseball, it's just all your buddies.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like, whatever happens, happens. As where when you go and play baseball or soccer or whatever, you know, you got all the parents are there. Like, it's such a, you know what I mean? When you're a young kid, like I think it's just the pressure of it all. You know what I mean? Like, it's less fun because you just want to have fun. But is this fun?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, is this fun? Like,
right.
It's like the parents are all on you and stuff. Yeah, that's why I always gravitated towards, you know, young stuff. And yeah, I mean, parents and sports.
Well, and that's one thing that I got irritated by too. I mean, Aiden would do soccer, he'd play basketball with the Parks and Rec. And I want to encourage him, but it's like I try really hard to not be that guy, right?
I think it's hard also to be on the flip side of it, also to not be that parent, because I think sometimes you see a little bit of yourself, and as a parent, I think, I mean, you're a parent, I'm a dog parent, but but I think naturally you're trying to see maybe something a little, you know, something you want to see in your kids from yourself, but you also want to see something a little bit different from yourself. And I think, you know, if you had an aversion to team sports, you're kind of hoping that he'll be into team sports, or at least try it. And then, you know, but,
Well, and I think initially for us, it was trying to get him into something, trying to find out what worked for him, right? Because he was going to do something. He wasn't just going to sit here at the house and do whatever, watch TV, play video games every single day. He wasn't going to do that. We needed to get him into something. He needed to be active. He has this boundless energy that seems to come to a crashing halt at about 8 o'clock at night. So it's like he's got tons of energy, and then just like that's when, you know, meltdown about 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
But so we wanted to burn off some of that, right? And so it's just like, gotta find something for him. And it wasn't until after going through a couple of rounds of the basketball and the soccer and the baseball, t-ball or whatever, and finally we're like, God, he just does not gravitate toward this stuff, but he loves going to the beach, he loves going swimming. He loves working on the bars, like I was saying, like monkey bars, pull-up bars, stuff like that. I was like, well, he obviously very, like, what can I do successfully rather than what can my team do successfully? And obviously team dynamic is important, you know, if you're going to be a workforce person in the future or working with anybody. But right now I think it's just good for him to understand how to control himself and build himself up. But it is interesting you mentioned that about the, or you bring that idea about, is it a creative thing? Is it a singular focus, or like a more like some like participating in singular sports? Is that more creative, or is it introversion? Is it, you know? I mean,
I don't necessarily think that. I mean, just because you're adverse to team sports means you're in a sense more introverted. You know what I mean? Because I know what you mean. I think there's plenty of kids that are extremely social. They just don't. I think kind of like what I mentioned, it might be possibly like it's just the pressure of it all. But then equally, you know, with skateboarding and everything, like you learn so much like artistic expression just by, you know, being alone, skating on your own, you know, meeting your buddies, skating. It's just such a individual type, you know, form of expression. But
did your parents push you for team sports or anything like that?
I think it was just the status quo, right? Mm-hmm. It was you do that.
So what you do.
It's what you do. Yeah, and I mean, it did it.
See, my circumstance is a little different because my mom was single mom and didn't have the time to take me to team sports. Like, I played football. Like, I played organized football. And I tried baseball a couple times, but didn't really dig it that much. Like, baseball is not my most... Baseball, team sport, is not my most favorite, right? Yard ball or whatever is great. Love that. Yeah. That's fun. Right. But, and, you know, even the football is like, I excelled at football. But once I got hurt in my sophomore year, I was just like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
Like, even when I came back after the injury, I was just like, I really don't want to go back. So it's like, but yeah. And it was just like my mom, she didn't have the wherewithal. She didn't have the time and energy to give it to me. So
yeah.
I didn't have a choice, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think like roundabout way to going back, you know, to what you were asking. Yeah. It just feels that with a lot of organized sports or team sports, just there's so many parameters. It's less about, I think those things kind of are obstacles of fun. I think, you know, you keep it simple, you know, it's, I think, yeah, with skateboarding and everything else, it's just very simple. You don't need much. A curb, street, you know what I mean? And then you can create so much from that.
Just,
you know?
Wrecked my curbs on my street. Like, just wrecked our curbs were just destroyed.
Yeah.
And my neighbors hated me because then I would, like, once our curbs were destroyed, then it was like going next door to the neighbor's house to destroy.
It's funny curbs. Being it's funny being on the flip side of it because you're the, you know, we're like the old men now, and then you know, I don't have it, but I sometimes, you know, I still have, like, I think we mentioned it in another pod, like, I'm interested. I still have that eye for banks and and curbs and what have you. Some of which I'll see, you know, a curb that's in someone's in front of someone's house, and it's got, you know, curb grind lines or wax lines, and I'm kind of thinking to myself, God, that looks so fun. And I'm like, I'm so glad that's not in front of my house. It'd be fun to skate, but then I'm thinking, like, the old man. I got, like, 10 kids in front of my house skating.
Get out of my,
like,
out of my house.
Right. It's funny. You know, equally, because we were joking, too, like, in the back of our house, in our backyard, I got a space where we could, I think I mentioned this, too, we could put like, a little mini ramp in our backyard. And, you know, the 15-year-old in me would love to do it. My wife, Rochelle, she said, oh, no problem. You could totally do that if you want. But I'm not going to do it because I know I'm getting into the mindset of my neighbors.
Yeah.
And my neighbors getting annoyed. And I get annoyed about the dumbest things with my neighbors, too. So, but anyway, I digress.
Old men.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's funny. The other day, I was going to some professional building, and I noticed that they had these rails. They were wooden rails, and they were a good angle, you know, and it was outside. And the atrium leading up to the rails would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect, right? Wooden rails so that, you know, you're going to get a good slide, but not too much slide, right?
Was there any stoppers on them?
Well, that's
the
thing. They had the stoppers on them, right? And they did look completely out of context to the whole rest of the building. It's like kind of this modern-looking building.
Yeah.
And then they have these ugly little stoppers on those rails. And I was just like, oh, man. Race cars down the street.
Racing cars.
But welcome to the neighborhood. yeah, it's just like, man, it was like I felt equally bad on both sides, like, I felt bad for the skaters because, like, those would have been epic rails to skate.
Yeah.
And then I felt bad for the business owners because it was like they had to go and ruin their perfectly nice rails to put those things on. So,
Those damn kids. I love it, though. I love it. Like, we talked about it before, too. I always like seeing kids and, you know, adults skate. I just love seeing it. And
yeah.
I mean, I still roll around myself, but I love the fact that, yeah, there's just so many people doing it. I think it leads to so many different levels of artistic expression, you know?
Yeah.
Aside from itself being incredibly artistic.
Yeah.
I love it. I always get encouraged by it, you know? I feel that this, you know, there's still some good eggs out there.
Yeah.
Oh, so no headphones now?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have them on before.
You did have them on before.
But I took them off.
Oh, you did take them off. Man, I'm losing it.
Get off my headphones, man.
Get off my headphones. All right. It's a creative market. What happened?
Okay, so I got this blank. Basically, I applied because I'd already, again, Tiger Hero Media is the website that I'm working on. I've got some product up there now. I'm building the website as we go, adding products as we go. I'm not adding as much as I want to yet because I'm building my second magazine template.
Yeah, I think I saw the first one look really good.
Yeah, so build got my second one coming up. Just finished it. Technically finished it today. I got to polish a little bit, but it those take time, and so I'm not able to produce as much as often as I want to. So next steps are going to be more. I'm going to do smaller 4 pagers and 8 pagers or whatever, and maybe some brochures or whatever. Stuff that, you know, I can dump on really fast and I can knock out. Anyway, so what I have available right now, I submitted as like, hey, here's proof that I'm doing stuff. And, you know, their application process is super small, super simple. It's like, where's your portfolio? Where else do you sell your work? Why do you want to do what you want to do?
Yeah.
I filled it out, and I kept it pretty simple, but I pointed them to my Dribbble page, which is dribble.com if anybody's interested. Went there because that's the portfolio. I also had, I pointed them to the website for the selling, and then I just said, I want to make stuff to help creative people do their things easier. That's it.
Yeah.
Kept it simple. I got a letter back, a form letter, a couple days later, saying that this, in general, the that not quite up to the level of the kind of work that they produce, which I thought was weird because it's like, I mean, I'm no slouch when it comes. I'm not the greatest designer in the world. I will never claim to be the greatest designer in the world, but I'm definitely no slouch.
So what was the, like, did they define?
No, they didn't define it. They get so many applications all the time that they can't give specifics. So I don't know exactly what it was, but it...
Did you use Comic Sans for the whole thing again?
One of these days, I swear to God, I'm gonna do something in Comic Sans and I'm going to try and make it look really good. But I don't know. One of these days, I'll use Comic Sans. That has been my goal of mine. That's kind of my bucket list thing.
I want to see that.
To do a design with Comic Sans and make it look good. I don't know. And it won't be a comic book.
There you go. So they didn't give you any... There was no...
No insight whatsoever. Sucks. So it's like I kind of have to shoot from the hip and figure out, okay, well, what did I think? Maybe they needed more product. Maybe I need my little thumbnail images to be a little bit better. Maybe they just need to see more work. I don't know.
How many other, like, in that realm, like with magazine layout, like, was there much competition?
There's quite a few. But, I mean, it's not, as far as the things on their page, on website, on Creative Market, magazines are probably somewhere in the middle as far as, like, popularity.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. I was thinking it probably is not, like, it's not the upper echelon, so I would feel like you've got a little bit more of a chance because, you know what I mean? There's stuff up there, but you're not competing. Your competition is much or less, essentially.
So maybe it comes down to the way I presented the one that I have up there now and go back and look at that. In fact, I just listened to another episode of this podcast called The Honest Designer Show.
Which I was going to say it was a podcast. Why didn't you get into Creative Market podcast?
Well, their episode, is there four people? One, two, three. Yeah, there's four guys, four people, three guys, one woman on this show, and they're all digital art creators. Like, they all, like, some of them make brushes, some of them make fonts, some of them make illustrations that they use for digital, you know, like reselling or whatever. They're just talking about what works, what's going to sell, like, say, on Creative Market, or what's going to sell on Etsy if you sell them there, because one of the woman who does the illustration, she sells mostly on Etsy. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to have to play around with it and figure it out. Add more stuff, have more things available so that it looks like there's more to be done. And that's fair, but it was really kind of like a kick in the stomach, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, but yeah, adding more stuff is probably the way to go.
Just
keep adding more and see what
happens.
Just
keep adding more.
I mean, I saw the layout was decent. Like, it was a good layout. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I mean, I know I do decent work. Am I David Carson? No. Am I, right? I mean, am I is one of the greatest magazine layouts of all, layer, or, you know, designers of all time? No, I'm not going to say that. But I do efficient, good work that would help anybody who wanted to create a magazine be able to do something efficiently and well and look nice.
I'm just going to, if I get accepted by putting up, if I end up doing something at the Creative Market for all my photos of palm trees.
Yeah.
You want to buy a palm tree photo?
Palm tree photo.
Buy it from me. Straight from California. If I get in, something's wrong. Because I'm just going to they can buy my Instagram photos. But yeah, that's frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I guess you just have to, you know, keep going on it, you know?
Exactly. You just keep going and just keep doing the thing. And on the upside is that I'm creating more stuff. I've had my own website. And I've talked about this before, this idea of digital sharecropping, which it's not my original idea, but I've talked about it in the past, where it's essentially being beholden to a particular platform for your stuff. So let's say you're an Etsy seller, like you only sell on Etsy, and for some reason you get, like, knocked. There was this woman, this is a while ago. She was making digital download stuff, but it was like remember when everybody was doing all those fancy Facebook and Instagram, like they would make buttons for their website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like fancy looking in Facebook. Well, this woman, that's all she did. Like those types of buttons in all these different varieties. Like she had hundreds and hundreds of listings for those things. And she got knocked because she was using essentially intellectual property. Anytime she sold a Facebook logo, she's selling, like she's basically, you know, like blowing it. Like she's infringing upon Facebook's property.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got knocked off of Etsy for it. Like somebody complained and somehow she got knocked off of Etsy and it became this big hullabaloo. Like she had all these fans and followers on her blog. She talked about it, rant and raved, and really came down to like she basically went from making thousands of dollars a month to making nothing because she was only on Etsy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anything ever happened from that, like where she went from there, but she essentially was like out of business in an instant.
It seems like sooner or later, despite what platform she would have been on, she would have probably got canned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, your shelf life with that, there's no way that could be sustainable long term, I don't think, because of the intellectual property, you know? But
right. Well, and even the people that make things, like there was a... I know you're familiar with this, the whole keep calm and carry on, right? There were tons and tons and tons and tons of people doing that. Like, I think Victoria Smith was one of the first people to be popular for selling those on Etsy or whatever she was selling them.
We, you know, a funny story with that. So, you know, you want to finish your story?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Let me real quick. So
I have a story on that.
There were other people that were doing that, and they were only doing those, and essentially, those were like super popular for a long time, and then they weren't. And then they was just like, okay, well, so they didn't verse. And they were basically relying on Etsy to sell those things for them forever.
Hmm.
And, you know, ended up like those people lost their business. Not, this wasn't Victoria, this was somebody else, right? They lost their business because, you know, they were so sunk into a particular niche on a particular platform that got so popular, it kind of got blown out. And so, point being, like, sure, I want to sell stuff on Creative Market, but I'm always going to have my own website so that at some point, even if, like, I never get on Creative Market, I'm continually building stuff on my own, people will find me directly, right? And so continuing that idea, that mindset of, like, I'm building my own thing, Creative Market is just going to be there to help if they ever get a chance to.
Yeah.
So
that's supplemental, it. Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say about Victoria?
Oh, it was it reminded me of we did in 2007 when that whole thing was happening, and it sounds a little bit weird to say, but I'm 99% sure we were the first in 2006, 2007 when the Keep Calm and Carry On thing. They didn't really have there was no iterations, and we ended up doing the Keep Calm and Rock On one.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone picked it up, like Apartment Therapy, you know, all these different, like, people.com. I remember in December of 2006, we sold, I think, like $12,000 or $13,000 in 2.5 weeks of that poster when it took off. But then, yeah, then everyone did it.
Yeah.
Not that, and I'm sorry, that sounds weird saying, I'm not trying to say, I did it. Who knows? Maybe we didn't, but I'm pretty sure we were the first on that one.
Mm.
But, yeah, that was a crazy time, and then every single iteration of it.
Yeah, right.
After,
right. Yeah,
you know, I don't know. Yeah, sorry, that sounded kind of
no,
kind of braggy. But I never even think about that poster anymore because we don't ever sell any of them anymore. But it was so funny about that a long time ago.
Well, and I guess that goes to your whole ideology of just putting out more and more work.
Yeah,
because you never know when it's going to hit, and you never know how long it's going to last. Right.
Yeah, and. Yeah, and a lot of the things that we've tried, we've trademarked a few things that since then have done really well, but it's like next to impossible to enforce it.
Yeah.
Next to impossible.
So begging the question, well, so this makes me think, have you ever appropriated any ideas and then made them into your own design?
Oh, I sure. I'm positive.
Did you ever do fries before guys?
No, I never did that. But I think naturally there's always a level of seeing other people's work and appropriating a percentage of it and then putting your own slant on it.
Yeah.
I think there's always stuff like that, whether people want to admit it or not. I think there is that always.
Because yeah. We were, I remember somebody had a shirt that said fries before guys.
Yeah, that wasn't me. But,
it wasn't. But then I went to this restaurant the other day and they had that up on the wall.
It's the Wild West out there, you know? I mean, literally, it's the Wild West.
It's the Wild West in here. We're going. We're derivative all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. We are all over the place. But anyway, going back to your creative market thing, because I felt like I just hijacked that for no reason.
We don't have to keep going. But if wherever the conversation meanders, Adam?
Yeah, it was just, I don't know. But... It's frustrating. I find it's frustrating to web is such a big part of anyone's business right now. But the second you're exposed on web of any kind of level, or if you have a product that's doing well, you're instantly going to be dealing with infringement on so many levels, right? And it's a infringement in all forms of it are difficult because it really has to do with money. The defending of it costs money. And time and headaches. So yeah, we did a bunch of stuff where I trademarked and copywritten a few things and, tried to go after a few people and, the cost, cause you can get contingency lawyers, has been fine, but it's just so much time dealing with just the headache of it, dealing with it, even though you're not doing the brunt of it, the lawyer's doing the brunt of it. But that's frustrating.
Yeah, there was a while back. This was years ago. It was shortly. It was exactly after Andy Irons died.
Oh yeah.
And Andy Irons is a world class surfer. He died from overdose.
I think so. I think it was
questionable about exactly what all that was.
Yeah.
He died by himself in a hotel room.
Yes.
Anyway, so one of my favorite surfers. Just because of his attitude towards the sport or anything. But so when he died, it took it like really hard because he also died on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
November 2nd, he died on my birthday. So I remember this. So so it was heavy. And so just out of inspiration, I went, this is before I was doing anything else anywhere else. I went to Zazzle.com and created a t-shirt that said just said in straight text, just Helvetica, Andy would go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, based on the whole Eddie would go
mentality,
Eddie Eichhaus, and also world-class surfer who died out in the water. And Eddie would go is a famous quote in the surfing world. And I just was like, in honor of that, I created this shirt that said Andy would go. And within a day or two, I got a call from the attorney for the Eddie Eichhaus Foundation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Saying that I was infringing upon, their intellectual property. When technically, if I really wanted to fight it, like this is freedom of speech and derivative aspects, I probably could have argued that they don't have any claim over that, right? I didn't use the exact phrase. I didn't use their typesetting. I didn't use their logo, right? I just, it's just a similar phrase, different name. I probably could have fought it, but then it would have been thousands of dollars of legal fees and all this stuff. And what would have been worth? I didn't make a single penny off of that shirt on Zazzle, even though that was the intention. But it was like, whatever. So it just meant to be a tribute. And this, what came down, I was just like, screw it.
Yeah.
Not going to bother with it.
Not going to bother with it. Yeah.
So I didn't even buy myself a shirt. One of these days, maybe I should go to Printful and make my own shirt.
Yeah. It's interesting. That was about 5 or 7 years ago,
at least 7 years ago.
I think it was about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I see so much infringement everywhere, particularly on Instagram and with a lot of big companies, like, you get your Disney's and stuff. I see these little these advertisements for Instagrams when it's like a Star Wars kind of knockoff shirt, but it's like a really super random company you've never seen before, and it's like a sponsored post.
Yeah.
And yeah, like really, really weird kind of username. And I think it's just like sell as many of these as we possibly can before we get shut down.
Right.
But Yeah, it's interesting. It's all a money game, and yeah, I feel like the law is a little out of whack for protecting artists in that sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think it comes down to being able to police it. You know, a lot of people say, I remember that there were all these conversations. If you ever go into the den of iniquity that is the Etsy forums, I don't even know if they have them anymore, but when they did, it was like just one bitching session after another about who's infringing upon who and who's doing this right and that wrong. And it's like Etsy polices as much as they possibly can, but they're getting how many uploads every single day? Plus, they are not the legal entity to decide of what's infringement, what's not. They have to wait for, if you do a Star Wars thing, well, they've got to wait for Disney to come up and say, yeah, that's ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's also the DCMA. I think it was the Digital Contact Media Act or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some loopholes with quote unquote, fair use in there, which I think Etsy, you know, because Etsy's really more of the vessel for these people to do stuff, so they're not exactly, they should be policing it, but then obviously, like you mentioned, they're not policing it as much. But I think the DCMA Act gives them even a little bit more leeway with that, where the person who's infringed upon really has to prove that, you know, this isn't a legitimate infringement, X, Y, and Z. I find it one more thing that's frustrating about the world.
Right.
You definitely have to get exposed to get exposure.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, you have any success when you get exposed, count on getting knocked off.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't remember where it was. We were talking about it, or somebody else, about like the influence of our surroundings that creates the opportunity for new creative stuff, right? You walk down the street, something inspires you. Maybe it's subconscious, maybe it's conscious, and you go and you make something off of that. And if it's subconscious, like you go and create something, and later on down the road, somebody says, hey, that was my idea. I had it up here on the wall, you know, forever, and you didn't even know it, but it just subconsciously worked its way into your brain, and then you go and make something. It's like, well, you know, honest mistake, you know. But then
I think there's levels of that. I think your coincidences, you know, when they start lining up too much, I think that argument can sort of fall out. But I think there's certainly evidence of where that can happen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like.
Have you ever had to pull a design?
I don't think so. No, I don't think I've ever pulled one. I've pulled a couple where I thought maybe it's like right at the cusp, and maybe this could get misrepresented, or it's too close. And,
yeah,
you know what I mean. Just I usually have my own kind of parameter with it. You know that I know when to pull it or not.
Like for one example, I have this one of yours in my room. Where it's, I don't know if it's just two, now that I think about it, I don't think there's any text on it. It's just two guitars.
Yeah.
Like, I could, crossed.
I know what you're talking about. I mean, in theory, I could get burned on that.
Right. Because if Gibson came back, or Fender, or
sure.
Whatever.
You know, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could probably say every photo that you've ever taken, that you've ever used,
yeah,
that was an item that wasn't yours, you know, technically.
Yeah,
you really need to get like a release on that, not like a property release on it.
Right.
You know, that's why, I mean, in the movie industry, it's so crazy. I mean, you know, you've got to get a release on everything. In fact, there's one thing I'm kind of dealing with right now. We do a lot of stuff, or I have done a lot of stuff in the past for movies and television. And generally what they do is we get a release for it so it can be on someone's wearing it in a movie, or if it's a poster in a set. And a commercial did something recently, and they didn't get the release on something. We might do something with that, but again, it has to do with, is it worth it? Is it,
yeah?
Does it really hurt me? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I've aside from that Eddie Aikau thing, that's the closest I've ever gotten to legal trouble.
I hate
stuff,
it.
So.
I hate it, and I haven't done very much of it, but I don't. I'm not. Usually 9 times out of 10, I end up letting it go because it's just a headache, a headache.
And, you know, part of the reason why I do a lot of abstract art is because, man, you can't It's like, I just put paint on a page. I don't have any, I'm not trying to symbolize anybody or anything. It's like, I can just do it, and it's just a free expression, and nobody can say that I didn't come up with that on my own.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. So, no, yours looks like Basquiat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, so let's talk about that magazine over there.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking about magazines.
Magazine?
That's right, Rolling Stone magazine. Okay, so you know we're talking about magazines and magazine designs and whatnot. And one of the reasons why I do magazines as a creative from building the stuff that I want to be putting on Creative Market. Creative Market, if you're listening, help a brother out. Anyway, so I love magazines.
I do too.
You know, I love going to the newsstand. And we talked about this before. I don't necessarily buy as many as I used to, but I like to peruse them. But I was at the store the other day, and I saw this one, Rolling Stone magazine, classic, old school, but it had kind of turned into a cheap piece of crap for a while. It just basically became like the music for, like a People magazine version of for music and entertainment.
Spin as well, kind of same look.
Just kind of like went very corporate, like trying to like whatever bottom line they could fit. And I can't remember the creator, Jan Warner?
So. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Jan, I don't know. Was the creator of Rolling Stone magazine. And I know that he probably, like looking at the magazine these days or in the past, probably would like cringe whenever, you know. Because it used to be, when I was a kid, Rolling Stone was it. Like that was the magazine. Like this was before Spin, before Ray Gun, before, like Rolling Stone was the way you got information about what's happening in music and entertainment. Because the television, you only had a few channels at the time. We didn't have cable back then. The television didn't really provide, like you're not going to find out about punk rock bands, or you're not going to find out about the Pixies, or you're not going to find out about Soundgarden on their local television. They're not going to talk about that stuff. And this magazine would talk about those bands. And so I've always like had an affinity for this book, even though I hadn't subscribed to it in years.
Yeah, it looks good. You just showed it to me. I haven't seen it. And yeah. It looks like it's perfect bound.
Here,
it's, yeah, they definitely, they up the page count.
Right. They up the page count. They increase the quality. The cover is like a super heavy stock. Mm-hmm. The design has really gone back to a classic look to it.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really, like, that's actually a really interesting spread right there. Yeah, I want to show that show that one off. Where is that at? Oh, that one's cool, too.
That one is cool, too.
I really like what they're doing here with the... That one's a good example.
Like,
basically, just large type, good typeface, big imagery. There we go. Who is that in the picture? Those things suck.
Brock Pierce.
I don't know who he is. Well, whatever.
Bitcoin millionaire.
Oh. So, and you know, I haven't read any of it yet, so I don't know what the reporting is like, but I guarantee that's probably pretty good. Rolling Stone's always had a pretty good, you know, like they have a good track record of good editorial.
Yeah, it looks really nice. It looks like they've up their design game, higher page count. Definitely, it looks more the design's a lot more sophisticated.
Yeah. And then what's interesting is that they're the price on this one.
Oh, yeah, the price, yeah.
The price is a big factor, because before you might be able to get this one between $6, $7 maybe. I don't know exactly where it was in recent years. But
I think close to the most recent pricing was with that. You know what I mean?
This one is American, $9.99, Canada, $10.99. So significantly more expensive now than before, and part of that is that I think that they're probably, like, you go through this, it's not, I mean, there's advertising in here, but it's not overwhelming. It's not like loaded with ads after ads after ads like some of the magazines that are out there, and that's what it was before. It was like just stuffed with advertising, and that was what kind of like offset the cost of the cover, right?
Yeah,
the cover price.
I almost kind of wonder if you know, with the future of magazines, and this is interesting because it's just a, you know, staple mainstream magazine. It's more about, it's more of a, like, each issue is a more tactile special thing. you know what I mean? And it's designed as such, kind of a, you know, and it's priced accordingly, you know what I mean? Like, you got your Monster Children, and, you know, these upscale design magazines that look just gorgeous, right? And you know you're paying for,
yeah,
for what you're getting. And then maybe, you know, with a lot of these kind of things, with good content, you're getting great design, a heavier page count, less advertisements.
Yeah.
But yeah, for people like me who appreciate magazines, it's cool. Maybe that's, you know, in some ways the future of some print, short of, you know, your Us Weeklies and
for
your
sure.
people, you know?
Well, and I'm going to pause for a second to break, but I want to talk about this article that I read in The Guardian just the other day. So we'll talk about that in just a sec. I'm going to have to find some sort of filler, like some sort of fun little filler for these breaks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the time of this recording, I have no idea what I'm going to intersperse there, so I apologize if it sucks. But whatever. Anyway, back to the magazine. So I read this article in The Guardian that talked about how in Europe, in England at least, in the greater Great Britain, whatever, that the amount of independent publishing has gone up like 5 times in the last couple of years. So, I don't know what the actual number is, but you go to a newsstand and like most, or maybe not most, but a good solid amount of the magazines on the newsstand now are independently published.
Mm.
Which I think is interesting, right? And it's like there's, and it's against also the rules, the quote unquote rules of publishing, where like this is put out once a month, and some magazines put out once a week or whatever. Whereas these other magazines that we're talking about, maybe quarterly, maybe biannually or annually, you know, like totally like whatever, right? And it some schedule, but not so rigid to the old ideas, because they just want to produce good quality content at whatever scale. And to do this, to put out a magazine like this once a month is a lot of work. I mean, yeah. I don't know what the team is. Let's look at the masthead on this thing. My team, when I worked for a magazine, we had a team of, and we worked really lean. Our magazines, we work really lean. Okay, so this is the list of people that work within this organization, not just for this magazine, but there's, I mean, just on the writing staff, there's like 30 people.
Yeah.
There's a sales staff, and there's art direction and art and whatever. So there's a ton of people that work on this magazine. My magazine, when we would do it, like say when I was working on Street Chopper magazine, it was my editor, a handful of editors at large, people that were contract editors, a couple of photographers, also contract. I did all the art direction, and all the ads were spliced in by our production group. And so we operated really lean. And I know some of these self-published guys do the whole thing themselves. I mean, maybe they have a copy editor or whatever to help them. But they're basically like, I entertain the idea of making a magazine for myself at some point. I don't know what I'd ever do. But basically, I would do all the writing, find all the photography, find all whatever else I was going to fill it with, do all the art direction myself, and maybe have somebody read it for me because I'm a terrible copy editor, right? And so there'd be like a really lean and mean group. And in order to do that, I couldn't do that monthly. There'd be no way.
I've never been on a magazine staff that's probably had more people than a dozen total.
Yeah.
Including all the writing, copy editing, everything.
Yeah.
Designers, you know. And that was kind of a big stuff. But it's interesting, though, you know, we'll see what happens with this. Because going back to what you said about the, you know, in England, in the UK or Europe, you know, the way that they kind of do those magazines and having them published, you know, in different times, that kind of sort of creates more of the... You putting your headphones again?
I'm sorry if it's distracting. Making sure the audio was coming through.
You sure you're not getting ready to do your DJ set right now?
Right.
Like, but you know what I mean? Like, it gives the having that, I guess, infrequency compared to traditional magazines, that gives this sort of special nature of it. And then, you know, the content is so much better. So, but with this, since it's a monthly, that's going to be interesting with the price, how that takes off.
You know,
I guess they'll find out.
And I don't know if this was the first iteration of this design, because I totally, like, as much as I enjoy this magazine in the past, like, I've kind of been oblivious to it lately because I've seen where it went and I was just like, I'm completely disinterested.
Yeah.
But like, I saw this from a distance and I was like, It looks bigger. Like, that's what I saw. And I didn't see this at a regular newsstand. I saw this at, I think it was a Whole Foods or something.
Okay.
And so I just, like, it was just an interesting layout. Like, so so not what it had been.
Yeah.
And so I, like, reached out, like, bigger. And then as soon as I touched it, I was like, oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. The finish, it's more of a matte.
Right. The minute you pick it up, you know, like, it's not, something's different.
Yeah,
here.
No, it definitely looks, yeah,
they've done some work.
Game, yeah.
They've definitely done some work, and I'm gonna have to peruse this even more. But yeah. So anyway, it is interesting that if that's the case, you know, because another one is actually Playboy.
Oh yeah,
you know,
gone through a lot of
when
stuff.
They went through that iteration where they went back to like no nudity,
yep.
which killed them, right? So then they went back to showing nudity.
Who would have
again,
thought that?
Right. Oh yeah, nobody's gonna care if we don't show boobs anymore.
Right.
I mean, whatever your thoughts on Playboy, whatever it is. I mean, it's an iconic magazine. It's been around for decades and decades. And yeah, they obviously went back to the nudity, but they stayed with the design elements of it. It's not the super high, like the girls in it. I just happened to take a look at it because I saw it was available. It was the one that somebody had like opened it up or whatever. So I was like, I want to see exactly
somebody
what it looks
opened
like.
It up.
They opened up like because it comes up in the.
Oh, okay.
Now they have to be in the plastic, right?
I gotcha.
Right, has to be in
that
the plastic.
Just sounded funny,
right?
You're walking down the street, someone's arbitrarily like opening up a Playboy.
I was on the newsstand, but somebody had like cracked the plastic on it. So
right.
I took a look at it just to see what they'd done to it, and of course, nude women or whatever. But the design elements,
were a lot better.
I
haven't seen it either. But I know someone, a colleague who does makeup for a lot of shoots, like Playboy shoots, and I've seen she shows a lot of her photos that she's done hair and makeup on, and it even from the photography, like it looks like it's got a you know, really design centric kind of look to it.
Yeah, it's a little bit more bohemian.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Almost throwback to like the era, the 70s era, like the way the girls are.
Yeah,
they're not overdone.
No.
I mean, obviously there's probably makeup and stuff like that, but it's not like it's not that really high gloss filter.
But it's very like and when I say that with the makeup, it's very subtle. Like it's not you know.
Yeah.
Trashy or anything.
Like super big eyes or whatever.
No. Yeah, it looks, but...
dusting glitter on the cleavage or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Oiled up everything.
Oh, God,
yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It's encouraging that even some of these bigger publishers are getting it, that people will pay. And this is one of the funny things, and this irritates the hell out of me, actually, but one of the things that I used to say in our editorial meetings at the company I was at is that, look, if we put more energy into the quality of the artistry that goes into this thing, it will sell better, right? Or it will attract more eyes. Because one of the things that I definitely have seen on the newsstand that has not changed, you know, I worked on a motorcycle magazine, I worked on several car magazines, truck magazines. Those magazines have not changed, except for a few have changed a little bit, but for the most part they have not changed. And because they have not changed, it's just like a sea of sameness.
Mm-hmm.
You look up there at those books and it's just like, God, man, like I have no interest in anything that they put up there because I know it's going to be the exact same thing they've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
Aside from, say, a couple of magazines, like I looked at a copy of Cycle World magazine, and I don't know when they changed their design, but they definitely went to a more minimalist. It actually looks like if you can imagine Kinfolk magazine, which is like like minimalist, bohemian type lifestyle mag. Imagine that, but with motorcycles.
Mm.
You know, like, so it's like again, matte. Everything's matte like this, and the images it's very image focused, but the cover is almost all, well, I think it's like, it's got a big image, but it's got a big white bar across it. The logo is a little bit more contemporary, and it's just putting forth a good effort there, right? Changing the dynamic of what they're about rather than being so, it's got to look like it's racing. Like,
yeah, I know. It's tough with that. It's tough, I think, on if you're doing like, if you do a redesign of a magazine or something that's you think is dated, I think you really need to know your audience.
Mm-hmm.
Like specifically, you know, even, and it's tough when you're something that's so wide ranging, like, I guess, you know, Cycle World or what have you. Because then there's a lot of people on the flip side of it where you can go, well, I've got my features, which is, you know, you know, opening of a feature like full page spread with really, you know, huge typography and a lot of white space. On the other side of that, there's a lot of people who just want their really generic layout. They're going to be, why is there a giant ampersand on this page? Or why is there really crazy type? You know what I mean? Like, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I think there's a lot of people, you know, who don't appreciate it. You know, they just want, you know.
Yeah.
I need this to look like a penny saver. You know what I mean? Like, it's really about, I think, knowing your audience.
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing a redesign and like, you see that your demographic is definitely getting much, not to say that people our age or older aren't, you know, don't know design.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of young people also don't know design. But, you know, if you're getting a more, an audience that's essentially more educated than that, then, you do a redesign that sort of, you know, if you want to hit that readership, if that makes sense. But I don't know. I've worked on teams sometimes where we've done redesigns that look great from a design aesthetic, and they're very functional and the upfront back features, but then the reader doesn't get it. Like, they get it, but they're either stuck in what they've had before, or they just don't appreciate, you know.
Yeah.
New typography or
right,
whatever.
Right. If it's not delivering the content that they want, obviously, you know.
Yeah,
I don't think no design in the world is going to save you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
what I was trying to say is that sometimes, even if the content is good, that, you know what I mean? Like, I've designed for places where they'll see it and they just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can read it, but they don't, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder.
Even advertisers, too. They don't understand. Like, I've dealt with advertisers where they, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder about the, like, this. I wonder about the cycle world, because it's a departure. Rolling Stone's a departure, but it's not so much of a departure from where it was that it would be unrecognizable, right? Is Rolling Stone, that nameplate has always kind of been universal, mm-hmm. right? If it said Playboy, whatever, it said Time Magazine, you would know without a doubt. If Time Magazine ever got rid of their red thing, you'd be like, what is that?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they kept what was key, obviously, right?
Right. But Cycle World changed pretty dramatically. Because before, it would be like this hyper exciting image of a car or of a guy on a bike zooming past, or a bunch of bikes, and, you know, and it looked like it was like speeding, sitting on the newsstand. Like, look, it was going fast. And the new one is a lot more subdued. It's like it's usually like some sort of profile of a bike, and it just says Cycle World in there, and very minimal on the headline, the cover title, so cover blurbs. And so anybody who went from like the transition between the old Cycle World to the new Cycle World, and they were buying it on the newsstand, they might have missed it because they didn't know that it changed.
Yeah. Real right. Subtle redesign.
Right.
Real subtle change.
And it wasn't subtle. It was like, blam, it's like here's something new, right? And so they would have had to have actively been looking for it.
Yeah.
And that probably hurt Cycle World a little bit, but who knows? Maybe the over time they get it at some point, you know, but I don't know. But who knows? Well, I guess sometimes I think that, you know, I know magazine newsstand sales have been dropping dramatically. Even when I look at all the magazines that the old company I used to work for, like, you go there now, and, like, it's just every time I go there, there's, like, one less magazine on the newsstand. And I think at some point, when you have, like, a flagship magazine like Cycle World, which is, if I remember correctly, is the number one motorcycle magazine in the world, if I'm not mistaken. At least it was. And so if they're trying to stop the hemorrhaging, it's almost like at any point, it's like, we got to do something. Maybe we need to do something radical in order to make this appeal to somebody else, because we're all these old guys are no longer reading us. So we need to attract new guys,
yeah,
you know, new motorcycle, right. And, you know, and then also adjust to the trends in motorcycles, because obviously motorcycle trends change. And, you know, like, you don't see as many people talking about like the big, you know, super bikes anymore. It's almost like they're going back to like a retro style. And so I think, and that even if you look at what Cycle World's doing, like that's what they're like focusing on now. And so maybe they're following the trend, and they know that the people that are following that trend are also a little bit on the younger side. And so they're saying, okay, well, let's go after that guy now.
Question is, with a lot of the stuff having to do with the hemorrhaging of it, is it really the content or the design that's lacking in either the audience or lack of people reading it, or is it just simply like everything else, people are just not reading magazines anymore?
I don't know.
Like, irregardless of design or content, they're just whatever's on their phone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's just so much information constantly bombarding you. I mean, I get news alerts on my phone all the time. But I have to say, it was great looking at this Rolling Stone because it looks awesome.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to talk about that, is that it looks great. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy it every
month. That's kind of what I was going to say next. I don't realistically... I generally buy, and I think we mentioned this in a past pod, that I buy magazines usually when I'm at the airport, I'm on a holiday, and when I actually have the time to digest a magazine, you know, when I'm actually, okay, I'm going to be on a plane for 6 hours, or I'm going to be sitting by a pool for 2 hours, you know, I'm going to read a book or read a magazine. I love reading magazines, but yeah, I don't know in the normal, you know, my normal day if I'll be picking up a Rolling Stone every month, you know what I mean?
Well, and to go to those other independent magazines who only produce once every quarter, once every, or twice a year or whatever, maybe that's what works for them because they know that, okay, well, this, not only can we not, like, fiscally be responsible for creating something monthly, but if you do it 3 or 4 times a year, then that not only is easier for us to do, easier for us to create because we have more time to get the content out, but also gives enough space for the readers to say, okay, well, like, I've read that copy and it's been about 3 or 4 months now, and where's the new issue? And so maybe I'll go find that next issue because I haven't seen it in a little while. You know, it's been 6 months, it's been a year, right, or whatever. Let's go see what else is going on there. Maybe they rely on that idea, like, okay, well, people don't expect us to be out every month, and so they're gonna be anxious or eager for us next time we publish. Maybe.
Yeah, that's for most of the art mags that I picked up, it's kind of like that. I like that too, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Who knows? Like, I mean, and this is kind of like, you know, kind of going back to the cold idea of creative market, why I do magazines is like, maybe, just maybe, there's people out there who are talking, having this same conversation with themselves about making their own magazine. But, and maybe they're just, they're not necessarily high profile designers or even, you know, competent designers. Maybe they just want the idea of being able to do something in whatever program, make something, put that out just for fun, you know, post it up on magcloud.com or Blurb or wherever, you know, you can get magazines printed.
Maybe it'll be kind of like when I was in the 80s, I did a skateboard zine,
you know,
for like a couple of years, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Got me into design, and the whole purpose of it was just to connect people who, in this case, love skateboarding, but also you kind of make this Xeroxed zine of what's happening in your area, and all you do is just trade it with, and all I did was I traded it with other people around the world, some of which I'm still friends with. I mean, it'd be funny if it kind of goes back to that, because I mean, yeah, there was no money in it. There is no money in it. It was just
you do it for love.
It was just pure love.
Zine culture is an interesting one. I learned an interesting word, and of course I'm blanking on it now, but it was, I think it's actually a Russian word, but like specifically, in fact, I think they talked about it in that article, and I'll link to the Guardian article in the description because I think it's interesting for other people. But it's this word that basically means the idea of usurping the authority of the standard, which is like the magazine, like the publishing standard, like going out there and doing a zine or doing a self-published indie mag, you know, saying middle finger to the establishment, I'm going to do this my way and I don't care what your rules are, you know, and not just the rules of like publishing, but even like the rules of just design and layout.
Yeah.
right? I'm going to glue my type on with tape and then Xerox copy that, you know, and then put that into a page or whatever.
I think it's kind of what Carson did. He kind of did that in essence, but brought it to the traditional print world, and all of a sudden, you know, was this, you know, unorthodox, you know, art director doing all these different things that was so different in the current magazine standards, you know what I mean? It kind of shook it up.
And because he wasn't formally trained as an art director.
Yeah, I mean, I knew a lot of people that couldn't stand him, stand his stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly loved a lot of aspects of it. But it really takes you know, note from that kind of zine culture where it's just, you know, there's no grids. where you're just slapping stuff down. And I mean, I think the other thing too is back in those days, at least when I was doing it, you know, you're drawing, you're like glue sticking, like, you know, pictures onto, you're essentially making like ours was 8.5 by 11 folded. You're just making a template. You're letter setting captions. You're trying to do type. I mean, this was all pre-digital. I mean, in the sense that it was affordable.
Cutting amber lith.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. But it just, so there were no rules, but that was kind of the cool aspect of it. I mean, I think, you know, that'd be a fun pod to talk about in the future.
Yeah.
Expand on.
I follow this guy named Chris Ashworth on Instagram. He goes by Ashworth Chris on Instagram. And he was the kind of the follow-up art director behind, like, I don't know if he was the next one or the next one after Carson. Like, after Carson left Ray Gun, I don't know if it was him or he was the next one after that, because he was actually the art director on Blah 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 magazine, which was an offset of the same Marvin Jarrett's other publishing company or whatever. Anyway, so he was essentially made to follow Carson's, like, kind of a derivative of Carson's style, but a little bit more subdued, but his Instagram is kind of filled with a lot of stuff like that. It's like Carson, but more like reined in.
Oh, interesting. You know? Yeah,
but still cool stuff.
So he's not changing all the copy to Zap Dingbats. Was it like a whole issue that was?
I think it was just a story. It was a story about, oh, we can't think of his name.
All the copy was converted to Zap, right?
Like, yeah, the kind of gothy English band. I can't think of the name. He hated that. He said the story was terrible. He said it was just a terrible article, and so he did the whole article in Zap Dingbats.
That's so funny. That is so funny.
Because that's about what it was worth.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, when you look at a lot of the mags from the early to mid 90s, a lot of really interesting kind of stuff. Like, Reagan was doing a lot of cool stuff. And then I think Carson, he was working over, I think he worked at Transworld for a little bit.
Yeah.
Skateboarding, I think. But a lot of interesting, crazy layouts.
Yeah. Good conversations for another time.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
We're going to talk about that more. About culture, how magazines and culture kind of collide. That's interesting.
It is.
We don't want this to be strictly magazines, but we both come from that world a little bit. So, you know, we're going to talk about that occasionally. So, or maybe not so much occasionally, but every time.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, it's been a long one, so we're going to go.
Yes.
But thanks for everybody for hanging out. Adam, thanks for coming by the house and hanging out in my backyard.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at your Aussie barbecue right now.
Aussie barbecue? Yeah.
We got a barbecue at our house. We can talk about that.
You want to throw some steaks on it?
Oh, man. Right. I wish. I'd be knocked out for like another hour. I'd have to take a nap.
All right, folks. That's it. We're done. Remember, be good today. Be better tomorrow. See ya.
See you.